There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission.
Do you realize that every important change in the world for the last 30 years has come out of research in microwaves, radar, television, even the H-bomb?
Well, I'm sorry, Alan. Don't ask me to appreciate it because I can't. It's cold. It sounds like sleet and snow, and it looks like electricity frozen. I don't like it. I'm sorry.
Welcome to On the Brink Radio with Jeff Wefferson. This is broadcast number 163, being recorded here on the 29th of July, there with Terry Lilly in Kauai, Hawaii. But Terry, I really want to appreciate your taking the time and all of your amazing, amazing work on behalf of all of our friends and family in Mother Ocean there off of Kauai. And, my God, well, let's just start with you. Tell us about yourself and what you've been doing for the past few years. And
It's really kind of interesting, Jeff, and thanks for having me on in a huge way. It's a little bit ironic. I've actually never been to Australia. It's one of the places that I've not been to. But I had one of the largest captive breeding zoos for endangered reptiles for 30 years.
Really?
Yep, and I had the largest collection of Australian reptiles outside of Australia.
Very interesting.
Of the Australian monitor lizards, and shared that information with Steve Irvin, who was a good friend of mine from the Crocodile Hunter, and I've gone back and forth now with Australian herpetologists and animal lovers for almost 30 years, helping protect Australian reptiles.
That is so cool. Well, I was going to ask you if you met Steve Irwin, because it made me think of him. And guess what I've just painted? I just finished this big mural, and the dominant being in it, her name is Dirawang, who is the ancient Bundjalung Gowanna ancestor.
Well, this is really incredible, and I won't go into too much detail so we can get on to talking about our coral reefs, but I was the first one in history to captive produce the goannas from Central Australia, the Varanus flavirufus, the Varanus gouldi, over 30 different species of monitor lizards from Australia, and
wow.
That was in the 1980s. I know the marine creatures, I know the problems going on the planet, and it was just by accident that I was in the water outside my home here, at Hana Lake, Kauai, diving every day. I've done 1,000 hours of video along the coastline. When I started to see the coral reefs dying in 2012 for no understandable reason, and that's what ballooned into this study that I got into, which now directly relates to the die-off of the coral reef on the Great Barrier Reef. I went out into the California desert. We raised a bunch of these animals right under high power, high tension lines that we knew had these huge electromagnetic fields. And sure enough, all of the reptiles that were raised within 2 miles of these high power lines all died. Every one of them.
What year was that?
Yep. So I started doing this, launching this worldwide study of electromagnetic frequencies on land. And sure enough, anywhere I went in the world where these electromagnetic power lines were, and later on in life, cell towers, most of the reptiles within miles of these areas had died. So what I knew in Kauai, I'd already known this in 2012, that the U.S. military was going to start up, and I've got all the documents on this, by the way, right from our Congress.
Yes.
They were going to start up the first ever microwave war campaign tested here on the North Shore of Kauai. Well, I already knew what microwave war was because my brother worked with Ronald Reagan on developing the Star Wars policy a few years back.
Yes.
So that was all launched in 2012. They turned on all of the microwave towers. They weaponized them. They bumped them up to 6 million watts. They changed to vertical pulsating frequencies to use for warfare. And as you know, Stuart Simonson's been studying, the electromagnetic effects as an engineer about all of this for years.
He's a brilliant mind.
We've been on this now for quite a while.
A brilliant person.
So for me, I already knew what electromagnetic frequencies would do to cold-blooded reptiles. So in 2012, I started seeing the entire reef system along the north shore of Kauai here become diseased and started to die when it was not dying throughout the rest of the Hawaiian Islands.
And this was at the...
I'll fill you into a little bit of this comparative study.
Yes, but...
And so I just automatically put two and two together due to my background with the reptiles and said, you know what? This kind of electromagnetic frequency being beamed at the sea surface has got to make some kind of effect on the nearshore shallow reefs.
Absolutely.
There's got to be a tie in here.
May I ask you a question? When you started seeing the adverse effects on the corals, that was within what? How soon after they initiated the microwave warfare thing?
Within
a year of that?
This was amazing, Jeff. And because of my studies, I was successful to get NOAA, the University of Hawaii, Scripps Institute and the USGS to come over here to Kauai in 2013 and 2014. So just in brief, in 2012, the coral reefs here on the north shore of Kauai were what I would call as pristine as anywhere in the world. We don't have a lot of people that live here. We do have farm chemical runoff, but we simply don't have a lot of interaction between people and the environment. This is a small island. There's only 60,000 people that live on the whole island. The reefs were unbelievably healthy, and I've got entire video of all the reefs in 2012, including the coral reefs on Niihau, Lanai'i, the Big Island of Hawaii, Oahu, and Maui. So I went all throughout the Hawaiian Islands and documented the reefs. So in 2012, in August, I started seeing this weird disease on the corals. By 1 year later, 30% of the reef was infected and dying. Now, all the authorities came over and did massive survey works with me that was on the front cover of LA Times. It's been on 178 news stories, 28 television shows. It's been all around the world. Within 2 years, we lost 90% of our corals near the military base. We lost 50% of our corals up and down the entire north shore of Kauai. At the same time, on average in Hawaii, less than 1% of the reefs have died on the other islands.
Yes.
So these are just facts, and I've documented over 1 million corals. With the University of Hawaii, we did GPS on about 5,000 corals. And, Jeff, what happened during those 3 years is the authorities, these are really good scientists. I mean, I love them all. I know them all personally. We all dive together and we all put our hearts into this. They came up with an absolute blank as to why the reefs were dying.
Yes.
The only thing that was proven is that the corals had lost their resistance on the north shore of Kauai.
Yes. Well, may I ask you something? We're opening the door to several fundamental issues here, two of which are, did you ever hear of a woman named Dr. Rosalie Bertel? She was a Catholic nun but a medical doctor. She wrote, was very much of an educator about the global nuclear scenario, and then she went to the next level with her book called Mother Earth as Weapon of War, and talking about all these, the new generation of all these technologies that you're talking about. But one of the questions she brought up was that humanity, we have to actually question why we have the military-industrial complex to begin with, and what the function
it's grown so far
out of control. It's this juggernaut that just rolls over everything. It's the biggest business in the world. Purpose is death and destruction. But I think so many people, especially Americans, of which I'm one, so many Americans they've been conditioned through a variety of different sort of psychological factors, some deliberate, some unconscious, to where they, when it comes to questioning anything about the military, they can't. They've been conditioned to accept that we have to have this thing for our own protection or whatever reason, and that's why these scientists drew a blank, because they're not in a position psychologically to question this giant elephant in the living room that's killing the whole planet.
Jeff, you got it right on, and what you're saying is 100% true, and we can prove it. All you got to do is research Raytheon, and you'll see the answers written all over the internet.
Absolutely.
They post about it, Jeff. Our government agencies that are supposed to take care of our coral reefs and our university that's supposed to take care of our coral reefs are primarily funded by the U.S. Navy. The government is not telling everyone that they're manipulating the climate. They're in control of this so-called climate change. They know how to do that. They put billions of dollars into it. And then they flat out lie about the effects on the marine environment.
Absolutely. See, what you, that last sentence that you said, we should really delve into that, because there's so many people, out there that A, don't even believe that the technological means exists to do this kind of thing, and then B, they go like, well, why would they want to do that? And there's plenty of massive solid evidence that prove both of these statements. But yes, we've known about, even before the advent of HARP in the mid-90s, the government and the military, especially the Navy, have been working on ways to manipulate weather and environment for all through the 20th century, using any different kind. I mean, they even have papers they published about how they wanted to try to melt the Arctic ice caps to allow access to hydrocarbons and to facilitate polar shipping routes. And so they're doing all this stuff, and the public has no idea. They think that the technologies for this are just science fiction, but you and I know that. I mean, you've brought it onto the public radar that even HARP itself has now been supplanted by a much more powerful microwave installation there in Kauai.
It is so obvious, and as a scientist, it is so easy to prove and document. This stuff isn't secret anymore. There's movie after movie after movie after movie. The Chinese government just put out a document recently about, I think it was 180 climate control projects that they've done in China to make it snow in one place and dry up in the other, and how proud they are of being able to control their weather over China.
Wow.
Well, what people don't know, I mean, you can look in and find out how Bill Gates funded the North Pole project to try to close the ozone layer, and what they did in the climate manipulation. You can find out quite readily what they're doing in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands for climate manipulation. If you watch every hurricane that comes at the Hawaiian Islands, it takes a right or left turn before it gets to the two military bases.
Yes.
Every one of them.
Absolutely.
Even the climatologists are saying in the laws of physics that's not possible to happen.
Yes.
It's so obvious that they're doing these climate manipulations, and then they've spun out of control. It's kind of like a real-time Jurassic arc. They don't have enough knowledge to be able to manipulate worldwide climate. There's too many variables. And now they got to find a bad guy to blame all of the negative outcome.
Yes, and that's climate change.
The bad guy is
climate change.
You know, they blame it just on hydrocarbons in the atmosphere, and then they make up stuff, like they make up things like that makes the seawater warmer, and that causes coral bleaching, and that's what's killing our coral reefs.
Yes, but
there is not one bit of fact anywhere to support that. Matter of fact, every fact is the opposite.
Yes, our good friend Stuart Simonson, I'm calling it the Simonson effect to describe the electrification of the proximity of vessels and the shipping lanes becoming sort of an electrified conduit. He points out that in previous eras, geological epochs, like possibly the Carboniferous, there was massively greater amounts of carbon in the atmosphere and the water, and the temperatures were a lot higher, and all forms of life were just thriving then.
Stewart and other folks through these NASA data banks have tons of information, and they quite readily can show you a map of where the U.S. Navy has electrified the seawater and electrified the coral reefs in order to detect the new quiet submarines. The military
really?
Is quite open about doing this off the Great Barrier Reef and off the North Shore of Kauai. They're using underwater electronically controlled drones underwater electronic equipment. Microwaves are using all of this electrical technology underwater to detect submarines.
Wow, now look, now tell us about this.
In the area where they're doing that, that's the area where the coral bleaching is and where the reef's dying.
Well, see, now this is the first I've heard about them using these technologies to detect the submarines, because this is sort of like replacing what the LFAS, the low frequency active sonar, was about. But I totally believe it. And wow, so tell us about DARPA and the kind of you mentioned that your brother owns a company that manufactures top secret electronics for DARPA and the US Navy and stuff like that, and there must be so many really unbelievable science fiction level underwater technologies that I've heard about some of these drones, but how much of that is actually out there now?
You know the good thing about that one, Jeff, is what's more important about that is really truly what's available to you, me, and the public right now. And the DARPA program at one time was a very secret high-tech military program funded with billions of dollars off the radar screen for developing all types of new technologies for the purpose of warfare. They've been practicing and using these technologies off the north shore of Kauai here for a long time. They openly have put out documents showing how these new quiet submarines that the Chinese and the Russians are using. And matter of fact, the military, when I met with them here, openly said they detected these new submarines right up close to shore, right up next to the military base here. These submarines are somewhat stealth to sonar. They detect them by using underwater electrical impulses. So in order to do that, they have produced these drones that they utilize underwater, offshore. They're controlled by helicopters. And these drones patrol the coastline, putting out unbelievable amounts of electrical impulses to detect these submarines. Well, anyone that has any background history in physics know that electricity and water causes an electrical shock, but it also causes corrosion of metals. And the metals in the coral reef, the soft metals, the calcium carbonate, are corroding, and they're dying. I mean, it's really a kind of a no-brainer when you just step back and look at it.
Yes. Well, part of Stewart's work also talks about what he calls the cathodic protection systems that is also the electrification of the hulls of vessels, both military and industrial, to protect the hull from corrosion. And so then you've got electrical fields generated from that, and then the Navy has weaponized that same basic technology for the uses that you're talking about. So the whole area, vast regions of the ocean like the Great Barrier Reef, or I'm guessing anywhere where there's a facility that they want to of any strategic importance, they're probably electrifying the environment around there anywhere in the world right now. Would you say that's probably true?
They're not only probably electrifying the environment. I got an electrical shock and almost died of a heart seizure diving next to one of the military boats.
Oh my God.
The bottom line is they are electrifying the ocean environment. They're proud of it. They boast about it, and they will openly talk about it. Systems that they put on these big, gigantic military ships, the Australian Navy, by the way, the Australian Navy, Japanese Navy, New Zealand Navy, and U.S. Navy did these underwater electronic war testing on quiet submarines off the Great Barrier Reef. They started in 2014. There's web pages where they boast about all of this testing, telling the Chinese that, look at off the Great Barrier Reef, you better not come anywhere near Australia, man. We've got you completely detected everywhere you go. It's the exact same ships that they used off the north shore of Kauai that we spotted, have video of, have pictures of, the very same ships. And we follow the ships around the north shore of Kauai, and sure enough, wherever they go, the reef bleaches, the reef gets diseased, and the reef dies. I've got a million pictures to prove it, folks.
It's unbelievable. You also touched on something I wanted to ask you about. It's like, we tend to focus on the U.S. and Royal Australian Navies, but these technologies would, or something similar, would be in use by all the other major navies of the world and everyone in NATO. And if we map out how many different Navy vessels there are and how many different strategic locations there are around the world, it would be like looking at a map of the U.S. military presence. It's everywhere.
What people don't realize is this is not U.S. military or Australian military issue. The multinational companies that, like my family company, okay? Multinational companies that have operations that make military hardware, supply military permits worldwide, they're in countries all over the world. They produce this equipment all over the world. The last report that I saw, 45 countries are now buying and utilizing these quiet submarines. So if you're a multinational company like Raytheon, and you make trillions of dollars a year, and you're in 30, 40 different countries around the world, and you make a piece of hardware that gives the edge to one country over another country in war, then all countries have to buy that same hardware. And then all the countries have to buy all of the surveillance equipment to detect that hardware.
It's just like people have to get the latest virus protection software for their computer. The problem is being foisted by the people selling the technology. So it's ultimately greed behind all this.
It's 100% greed, and it's 100% lack of knowledge of how planet Earth works.
Well, she's a living being, and I really think that even though she loves us dearly, I think our time as a species is almost up here because we've run off the rails so far and become a threat to everybody else. As such the new technologies, I mean, you wouldn't have greater insight than me into this, but it's exponentially growing and becoming more and more destructive. And I wanted to ask you something. You touched on something in our first interview that really struck a very deep chord in me. You said that you had wind of some of the research Navy scientists there in Kauai working on dealing with the sun, with plasma, solar flares and plasma energy connections with the sun. Well, that sounds very much like, remember the supposedly mythical continent of Atlantis? I've read that there's actually a guy, he was a plasma physicist in the 1960s who actually came up with an idea and wrote it. He disguised it in novel form, but he was invited to see JFK and all these people. But he wrote a book about how he believed that the Atlantean scientists actually created what he called a solar tap. It was a way of creating a beam of energy that connected directly with the sun using some of their possibly crystal technology or something, and it went wrong, and it created a connection between the sun and the earth that was so, that brought down so much energy that's what caused their continent to sink. And of course this is a novel, but it could be that they're actually aiming these trillions of watts of microwaves at the sun just to see what would happen.
Well, it's no small wonder that the military is operating here on Kauai. Most anyone, and I really say this, I've been all around this beautiful planet. Most anyone that I've ever met that has a spiritual connection with Mother Nature and this beautiful planet understands that Kauai is one out of several power spots on the planet. Hawaii has a massive quartz dome underneath it.
Really?
It has what the Hawaiians always hear, do, and called as mana, M-A-N-A, earth energy. This amazing amount of earth energy flows out of Kauai. That's why people for a long, long time have come to Kauai to heal, because this beautiful mana, this beautiful earth energy, you can channel it through your body for the purpose of healing cancer or anything that you want to. Now, everybody knows that. if you're into astrological, astrophysics, if you're into intergalactic communications or transport or wormholes or any of these things, then you will understand that Kauai is a focal point of energy that's necessary and needed for these procedures. That's a very powerful amount of energy. We also know that microwaves are one of the most destructive energy forces in the universe. Microwaves are produced by the sun. They're produced, you know, by stars. I mean, you know, they're a natural wavelength in the universe.
Yes,
someone that can control the natural energy mana of the island of Kauai and utilize that with electronics and also try to match that with the natural microwaves out there in the universe would have what someone may say the ultimate power or the ultimate control over energy. Do you know that even on Kauai, we're being bombarded with about 50,000 electronic impulses a second? Okay, 1,800 years ago, the people in Kauai, the people that lived on all parts of the world that lived out in nature, you know, they weren't bombarded with any impulses of electronics unless there was a solar flare going on. So our bodies aren't any different, Jeff. We haven't evolved to deal with 50,000 impulses of cell towers and microwaves and electronics and television and all this stuff that are flowing through our brain every second.
Absolutely.
Now, when you go underwater and you're scuba diving, like I just got out at 80 feet deep off the coast here all by myself, you can observe. Up until the Navy started doing their underwater electronics, there wasn't anything there to interfere with human activity or animal activity.
Yes. Well, this is
So you can actually be like you were 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, and you can connect and interconnect with nature. It's hard to do in this electronic world right now.
Absolutely. You touched on a couple of really powerful points there. You're in a way, when you're underwater, you're protected. You're shielded from a lot of these energies and vibrations, except for the stuff that they're now putting directly into the water. We're the same biological technology that we've been for millions of years, but we're living in a sort of a mega force field of all these mutagenic and carcinogenic technological, energetic, and chemical influences that are the product of military industrial civilization. And we're the experiment. I mean, this is all come into being so recently in the geological time span. But you're also touching on something of that maybe that I've actually thought that it could be behind why the whales and dolphins returned to the ocean after being on the land, because maybe they realized that living in the ocean is a safer place where you're protected from these cataclysmic energetic events, bombardments from cosmic rays and energies from supernovas and stuff like that over the long term.
Vibrational energy is everything in the universe. You know, us humans, we're made of just simply vibrating particles. 99% of the human being is open space. It's in between that vibrational energy. It's called, you know, what Einstein called the void. That the electromagnetic frequencies in the entire universe travel easier through the void, through that voided space, than they do through matter. So when you start looking at matter, human beings, animals, particles, any of that, and understanding that it's just vibrational energy and it's very sensitive to different wavelengths. People, the ultimate weapon, okay, is a microwave, because a microwave disrupts the void, it disrupts the vibrational energy of all living and vibrational particles. And sure, microwaves reflect off of water. They don't penetrate water. Now, they know how to utilize different frequencies underwater now to do a hell of a lot of damage. But yes, you're right about that. Up on land, in the air, electromagnetic frequencies can much more easier vibrate the very fabric of life loose. And underwater, that's normally sound. I mean, sound is what the whales and the dolphins, and that's the way they communicate underwater. That's what travels so well underwater versus up on the land. And that's why things like sonar are so destructive to whales and dolphins and marine life, because that is the fabric of vibrational energy that they utilize in their life. So we can live in harmony on this planet, but it's like we have too big of boys with too big of toys here.
I learned an interesting phrase. I learned how to say it in Maori. Well, I learned how to write it in Maori. I'm still working on the pronunciation, but what it means, my friend translated it for me. It's how I think of the place where I am right now on Great Barrier Island, whose Maori name is Aotea. The bay where I am, because of what's happened here, both historically and in my experience here, I think of this as a sacred place of guidance from the whales and dolphins.
You know, it's unreal. Please describe to me the ecosystem there. Jeff, is it more of a kelp forest-based ecosystem?
Well, I believe I haven't done any diving here myself, but the waters are relatively pristine. It's quite chilly by Australian standards and probably by Hawaiian standards, but supposedly there are kelp forests around here. I'm not sure exactly how close, but I think there's supposed to be some really good diving with all kinds of life forms and stuff off of some of the islands that are just off of here, and also up around a place called the Poor Knights. But I think there's not any coral reefs. The most southerly coral reef is, I believe, Lord Howe Island, which is probably at least a few hundred kilometers to the north. But it's basically it's volcanic islands.
I know the kelp forest in New Zealand is very similar. I don't know my geography that well, but I've seen a lot of movies and reports of the kelp forest from colleagues of mine that have dove there in New Zealand, and the similarities between the kelp forest on the west coast of the United States. So very similar ecosystems.
Yes, I would think that the temperature of the water is probably quite similar. If we just sort of harken back a little bit to our previous interviews, you and working with your friend Stuart Simonson have made some what I consider to be absolutely groundbreaking contributions to our awareness of how military industrial civilization and the sheer presence of naval vessels in the ocean, regardless of whether they're actually quote-unquote fighting a war or not, or even conducting war games, just their very presence is putting out such a massive amount of electromagnetic and microwave energy that these are a form of environmental warfare on anything in the ocean and in the vicinity of these vessels. And what really prompted me to ask you to do this talk with me today was the fact that with all the attention that you and Stuart made for RIMPAC, the naval war game that happened in Hawaii a couple of months ago, in the next 2 weeks, there's going to be the New Zealand's equivalent of RIMPAC called Operation Mahi Tangaroa in the Auckland Harbor with over 30 vessels and the USS Aegis-class destroyer, the USS Sampson. So now tell us about, you told me yesterday that you've actually seen a boat like that in the waters off of Kauai, and that they're called destroyers for a very good reason.
Absolutely. You know, the one thing about it, like you just got done stating, that we've been making new discoveries because there's been little to no underwater studies done on the effects of electromagnetic radiation to marine life. So what we've been able to do in the last 4 years is a lot of direct observation. And ironically, that's the way most indigenous cultures have studied the environment, you know, for over a million years, is by direct observation. So the bottom line is, on the north shore of Kauai, when these destroyers have shown up that utilize this massive amount of electromagnetic energy above water and below, that we have a huge die-off of marine life when these destroyers are present. And we've well documented that, from dead turtles, dead whales, to entire reef systems being fractured and broken, and then shortly thereafter becoming diseased.
Yes. Well, may I ask you this? In terms of, I'm sure there's both a short-term immediate effect and also a longer-term chronic effect, but these electromagnetic fields and microwave stuff, they could kill sea turtles and whales and stuff in just one visit from these boats, right? Just in an afternoon.
Well, I mean, the easy way just to prove that is just to use the U.S. Navy's material and the shipbuilders of these ships, okay? They have warnings that come with these ships and with the shipbuilders. The Navy has warnings. I have good friends in the Navy SEALs that supplied me some of the warnings. So anyway, when these ships come into Auckland Harbor there, according to the shipbuilders, no Navy diver, Navy SEAL, is supposed to be anywhere within 3,000 feet of these ships underwater. And it says explicitly, if a diver is within 3,000 feet of these ships underwater, they could suffer an immediate heart seizure. Now, Stuart Simonson, being an engineer, has taken the electrical output of these ships. Anyone can access this information. You had a lot of it up, you know, on that link on your Facebook. And they're emitting that stuff underwater when they're coming in and out of the harbor and all these war games. Well, you know, if it can give a human being or a whale or a sea turtle a heart seizure within 3,000 feet of the ship, just think what 10 or 12 of these ships are going to do to the entire marine ecosystem.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's why I'm asking. I'm doing another interview with Stuart tomorrow. You know what would be really cool if we could, if all three of us could do a three-way Skype sometime. But I asked him to make a couple of new diagrams, like the one he made for RIMPAC that shows the kill zone when you've got several of these vessels together, because this is very much like RIMPAC. It's going to have about the same number of vessels and but it's only going on for a week instead of like 3 weeks, so maybe it won't be so bad. But
well, and Jeff, in the last RIMPAC here, I mean, you know, just because, you know, you and I and Stuart, you know, in the group we work with, we don't have $100 million to be underwater testing all of this to prove it right now. So we tend to utilize a lot of the Navy and the military's own information. When RIMPAC was here off the coast of Hawaii in 2014, they did a massive amount of damage to the reef systems and the marine life. I got all of that on video, and this damage only happened in the area where these ships were practicing.
Wow.
So it was pretty irrefutable. Now, on 2016, this summer, the RIMPAC, because of us documenting what they did to the marine life, they moved the whole exercise 50 miles offshore. And we did not have the nearshore damage this year as we did in 2014. Pretty much just proves the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Now, because they moved 50 miles offshore, that they have to put out a boating alert to all the commercial fishermen and all the boaters when and where they were practicing offshore. And I have a copy of that boat alert I can send to you, and it specifically says, don't come within X amount of nautical miles of our operations because they are deadly to anything in the area. The reason the military moved their naval operations, their RIMPAC, their joint war games with Raytheon and McDonnell Douglas and all of these nice companies that want to destroy the planet, the reason they moved them offshore is because we showed that their activities have the likelihood, that's the legal word here in the United States, to harm endangered species. So that's why they moved them offshore. You guys don't have the same kind of legal system and the same kind of laws that we do. That creates a huge problem. That's probably why they're doing it off New Zealand right now, and they're not doing it off the near shore of the United States of America, because they did get nailed on these laws. We only have to show the likelihood. So what do they do, Jeff? They make the marine sanctuary larger in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands. They order everyone out of the marine sanctuary, so you can't fish there, you can't do scientific studies, you can't boat there, you can't go into it. And then they move the operations to a place where we can't see what they're doing.
It's all strategically planned. They probably have whole think tanks that do nothing but plan this kind of stuff on the Navy's behalf.
Well, they do have major think tanks. As a matter of fact, like I've said, you know, in previous programs, that my brother's company is the one that goes around the world to seek out permits for these types of operations. So they go to one country, and then all of a sudden people get wise, and they pass a law saying you need to have environmental studies. Then they just go on to the next country. They country shop, these multinational companies, they country shop to find out who wants the money to operate in the area and who does not have sufficient laws to protect the wildlife.
Well, this is all the more reason why this is happening in New Zealand. I think I've talked about before, when John Key became the Prime Minister in 2010, I think it was, I've really noticed, I mean, not even just kind of, a very, very, very marked decline in the whole quality of anything having to do with environmental awareness and protection here, accompanied by the same kind of massive PR spin apparatus going in the opposite direction. But they've managed to reverse New Zealand's many decades long traditionally conservative environmental orientation towards like mining, towards offshore drilling for oil, all different kinds of.
New Zealand to all of us has been known as one of the most environmentally sustainable places on the planet.
Exactly, it was. It was until fucking Key got put in, and it's just been, it's because he himself is actually an international banker. He's more of a player. He worked with Merrill Lynch and was involved in the big derivative scam. He basically was behind a, they put up all of New Zealand's natural resources on the auction block, handled by Goldman Sachs. This is all years ago. So, and there's even evidence, I won't go into it now, but there's even a lot of evidence that the Christchurch earthquake scenario was not natural, but was engineered as a form of tectonic warfare, as prophesied by Zbigniew Brzezinski, to function as New Zealand's 9/11. But regardless of why that quake happened, in its wake, they've changed all the laws and stuff and initiated a whole new legal and administrative framework here, very, very, very similar to the Patriot Act in America that was actually,
yeah.
It was written months before 9/11. So they passed all these laws that make it legal for them, the Key administration, to basically, it's like neo-fascism. They can do whatever they want. They've been inviting every mining and oil company on the planet down here. And in the wake of the Christchurch quake, Lockheed Martin took control of New Zealand's military as a whole.
Jeff, I really, truly, really, truly, and we have a lot of information to show that the U.S. military is doing a lot of their operations off of Australia and New Zealand right now. And I'll tell you the reason why is we had a Supreme Court case about 8 years ago that the NRDC, Joel Reynolds, took to the Supreme Court. And it was the President of the United States, this was during the second Bush administration, so it would have been 8, 9 years ago. George Bush took the Endangered Species Act to court to try to get the Patriot Act and the State Department and the military, all of them, tried to get them so they did not have to follow the U.S. Endangered Species Act. And they lost the court case in the Supreme Court. So in the United States, it is still upheld right now that the Endangered Species Act overrules any other government law or mandate.
Yes. Well,
now, right after that happened, you find out is when the U.S. started to do a lot of joint operations with Japan, Royal Australian Navy, and, you know, New Zealand, off of Australia and New Zealand, because now they got to find somewhere that doesn't have such powerful environmental laws.
Absolutely. Well, so and you've talked about this Endangered Species Act before, but is that, say, like, for example, with the RIMPAC thing there, is that enforceable? I mean, even if it is the law, who can enforce it against the Navy
their
minions?
It's definitely enforceable. It's definitely enforceable, and there are ways to enforce it if it's reportable. The word here is reportable.
And that means evidence.
The bottom line is that starting in 2012, yes, there is a massive military buildup here in Kauai. You know, we just had 20 of the Osprey helicopters flown over. Raytheon's here in huge numbers right now. flyovers with the F-22 Raptors are going on right and left. The beautiful island of Niihau is a military base right now where they're practicing everything from high-speed underwater torpedoes that have killed, you know, a number of whales that have surfaced out at Niihau. And so they're using Kauai in this massive buildup. At the same time, we showed almost proven at this point in time, that the underwater electronics that they're using close to shore here is what was killing the coral reefs. Now, what we did do, because of exposing that to so many people worldwide, we did get the military to claim that they're going to do all of their testing and their buildup 50 miles offshore, so out at sea. Now, they said they were going to start that in 2016. Well, sure enough, we have not seen a military ship or any activity close to shore, and the entire North Shore of Kauai near the military base, the missile base, that died is now coming back to life in a phenomenal way. The amount of coral growth is pretty much blowing everybody away, especially it's across the board on all the reefs and how fast the corals are growing back. So it's kind of ironic that Trump is leading to this massive military buildup in Hawaii, but it appears to be happening offshore, and our local ecosystem is doing much better because of it.
Yes, and we owe you so much for your beautiful work documenting that, because you're also proving that the whole, the basic agenda of what people call climate change is not what people think it is.
Oh, absolutely, Jeff. And I'm doing it right now, and I'm almost done, and I'll have all the movies to you as soon as we get them finished. But it turns out, Jeff, I'm the only, this is according to the military, according to the Congress people, and according to National Geographic, all of them combined, and the University of Hawaii, and USGS, and NOAA. All of them have made open statements that I'm the only person that inadvertently, because I didn't do this purposely, I'm the only person that has a documented 30-mile stretch of coastline and coral reefs shot all over up and down the coast in high-def video, starting in 2006 when all the reefs were very, very healthy. Then all of these same dive areas up and down the coastline, I got video of the reefs dying starting in 2012, and then now I got video of these reefs all coming back to life in 2016. So it's and this is all being produced into a very professional movie that I'm doing right now. I don't know what the name is going to be, but I call it Before Navy, During Navy, and After Navy.
Yes.
But the bottom line is I have all the proof, and it's in the hands of a lot of people right now, so the military can't make a move on trying to, you know, eliminate the proof. And it's going to be a shocker to the world, because this is going to show an actual documentary of an entire reef system dying, and it has no timeline with coral bleaching, acidification, or sea temperature rise at all. And while this was all happening in other parts of Hawaii, the reefs were doing fine. And in other parts of the world, the reefs are doing fine. And when scientists in Australia get to see this footage, I think they're very clearly going to sit there and say, wow, that looks just like what happened to the Great Barrier Reef. Voila!
Exactly. And it makes me wonder, in the same way, remember when we did the three-way interview with Stuart Simonson, I brought out this quote from Admiral William Nirenberg, that used to be the director of the Scripps Institute in NATO, about the way that the Navy looks at organisms that live in the sea. They see them as biological interference, things that cast sonar blips that would would impede effective war fighting. And I was wondering if, in the same way, their actual attitude towards the Great Barrier Reef is that it is in fact a barrier. It's a barrier to shipping and to marine submarine and war vessel movement. And so the quicker it's dead and just crumbles out of the way, the better. Could that be how they're thinking of it?
You know what I've noticed, Jeff? Jeff, what I've noticed, and I can only speak for military here in Hawaii, because you know I've never dealt and met with the military folks in Australia, and I have read some very disturbing reports about it. But the bottom line is the military, the Congress people, the politicians, the business people, Raytheon, the military-industrial complex, McDonnell Douglas, all of these folks, from the Air Force to the Navy to the politicians that fund them, I have had the ability to talk now with all of these people over the past 3 years because, you know, I've had over 10 million people see my research about the military killing the reefs here. So these folks all opened up with me, and I've had meetings with every one of them, including just the other day. And the one thing that's ultimately clear, none of them ever did their homework, and none of them had any idea what was happening out there to the environment underwater. They weren't trying to get rid of whales. They didn't even have people in the water seeing that they were dying. They had nobody here in the water. They testified to this, by the way, the Navy did. They had nobody in the last 5 years underwater documenting the coral reefs, turtles, sharks, monk seals, and marine life. Nobody during this time, where they made this intense underwater electronic war games, similar to what they're doing off the Great Barrier Reef. So it's just pure ignorance, Jeff. It is. That's the bottom line. You know, their intentions are always hard to know, but I'm positive no one had negative intentions here to try to kill the coral reefs in Hawaii. And I've talked to the very top military brass and company officials on that. They just didn't know what they were doing.
That may be true, but it doesn't matter to how Mother Earth is looking at what our species is doing.
I agree. That's why right now, Jeff, there's no excuse. There is no excuse for scientists, the government, the Royal Australian Navy, and everybody else, James Cook University. There is no excuse for these folks in Australia for not getting out there with underwater electronic monitoring equipment. And they could test and know if the military activities off the Great Barrier Reef are helping to destroy the coral reef there, because this information now is available. We know it happens. We've shown that it happens. And we have 30 miles of a regrowth of coral reef here when the military cooperated and moved offshore. So there is no excuse. I hear reports about scientists, in Australia saying, 20 million years of evolution, all dying. It's a horrible thing. The Great Barrier Reef is dying. Well, it's not that horrible if you don't want to get out there and do the proper testing to figure out why it's dying. Just blaming it on the boogeyman or warm sea temperatures isn't going to fly, because there is no data showing that.
No, well, it's likely that many, if not most, of these scientists are, and this is not conspiracy theory, they're actually being paid to lie.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Jeff, 100%. They work for the federal government, that's the bottom line. And I already know this. I'm not going to mention any names because...
But I don't mind if you do.
...someone in trouble or hurt. But there are a group of scientists in Hawaii that are highly committed to figuring out what was killing the corals here. And when we got close to figuring out it was the military, they all were forced to take an early retirement, and I haven't heard from them since. So the bottom line is I hate to say, and it's got to change, Jeff, it has to change.
It will.
That universities are often funded by big companies and funded by the U.S. military.
Well, exclusively.
If you go out there right now, if you go out in the ocean, and there's an underwater coral reef survey going on, I'd say probably 99% of that you can track the dollars back to corporate America or the military paying for that work, so they can control the data.
Absolutely.
And if people don't lie, then they have to take an early retirement.
Well, they specify, the grant application includes the conclusion that they want to be found.
I know it. That's why, Jeff, I've done all of my work as an independent citizen, And I'll just tell you one thing, and I'm not like tooting my own horn, okay?
But you may. Toot toot.
This is, yeah, I mean, this is just a fact, okay? I do all this stuff just because I like to go in the water and shoot video and take kids out and catch a fish and surf and dive. You know, that's my main focus, is because I'm just trying to save it for my own selfish reasons, because I see the interconnectivity with the coral reef and the rest of life on planet Earth. Now, the bottom line is, though, that every single one of these people that I have worked with, every single one, okay, all got paid by the government. And I figured this out. In the last 3 years, I spent $182,000 of my own money. I had a zoo. I sold it. It was a zoo, not display, for captive breeding endangered species to be released back into the wild. So good zoo. But anyway, I sold the zoo, had $180,000. I spent 5 years spending my own money until I ran out of dollars studying why the reefs were dying here in Hawaii. Now, that's $180,000 figured out the problem. At the same time, all of these government scientific researchers spent tens of millions of dollars, more like $20 million, and they're still sitting there saying, we don't know why the reefs died.
There's an interview I did a couple of days ago with an interesting woman named Alana Freeland, and I believe that I sent you a PDF of her book. It's called Chemtrails, Harp, and Full Spectrum Dominance. She hasn't learned anything about undersea stuff. That's where you and I are filling in the picture. But she has created a pretty good overview of what's really going on with the global military agenda and what full spectrum dominance includes. And a lot of it is and it ties in with the HARP and microwave stuff there in Kauai, that to change the composition of the troposphere with all the chemtrails to make it more conductive for microwave transmissions to use in their weather modification and tectonic warfare. And also she's bringing in a transhuman agenda thing to where that they're actually working on engineering what people are through all these different substances and nanoparticles and stuff like that. And I think that there would be elements of truth to all this.
Jeff, there's more than elements of truth. NASA released images of planet Earth, huge pictures of, you know, entire continents. And what they did is they simply, you know, with their technology, they highlighted the formation of cloud cover. And every area where the microwave HARP transmissions are being sent into the atmosphere for cloud and weather manipulation, you can clearly see that from space.
Yes.
You know, it's so clear, it's unreal. And it also happens to be the areas of the most amount of radical weather we've been having on the planet. So when you're out in space from the space shuttle and these satellites, and you look back down, you're looking at clouds over all the Hawaiian Islands, or clouds over all of California and the Midwest, and, you know, you can see all the cloud formations, and they're beautiful, and they're puffy, and they're circulating, and there's jet streams, and there's a pattern to it all. And then you see this area of these cloud waves going out that are absolutely 100% unnatural, and they pinpoint to all of the known HARP weather manipulation areas, and you can see the whole thing vivid from space.
Yes.
I mean, as vivid as can be. It's kind of like, I mean, I showed him, I have a girls and boys club, you know, and a couple of these, you know, school grade classes that I teach at. You know, I show the kids these pictures and they can figure it out. They go, wow, that looks just like radio waves.